to your buddies, you look to your friends.
There's only a couple guys in the whole world that make me love pro wrestling, and you're one of them.
You know all the bad shit you've heard about us, it's all true. But another thing that's true is we love professional wrestling, and that's why we're here. I'm not sports entertainment anymore.
Talk to him, kid.
This is a new beginning, and it starts tonight.
A new day is dawning for DX.
You know who you're talking to.
What's up, everyone? This is X-Pac 12360. Thank you for tuning in. Have a hell of a show today, as always. We're going to be talking. Actually, we already did. We got this like exactly a week ago. After we did last week's show, with Drew McIntyre, we went down to NXT. The whole crew did,
and field trip.
Yeah, and we got an exclusive one on one interview with Aleister Black, aka Tommy End, and it was fun. It was really cool. Anyway, how you guys doing?
Great, man. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, man. There's a lot of effed up shit going on in the world, and then we have wrestling to escape all that with, which is really cool.
That's what it's there for. Right?
Yeah, but like, okay, and within wrestling, there's also sometimes some kind of effed up things that happen, like you know, the greatest of all time being in the hospital, like, you know, fighting for his life. Mm-hmm. So just want to send the love out to the Nature Boy, Ric Flair, and, you know, and his family. His daughter went, his daughter, Megan, his daughter, Charlotte, what's her real name again? I'm sorry. His fiance, Wendy, everyone that loves the Nate. And also, you know, some people might have saw this or read something about it, and ended up talking about the subject on the Tomorrow Show the other night and started talking about some things, speculating on things, concerning Rick's health, and just without knowing all the facts and going off into certain directions I wish I hadn't, and want to acknowledge that probably should have waited to talk about any of that stuff. That being said, anything you guys want to add to all that?
No, there's been like a real huge outpour from the WWE Universe and on both shows as well, so we definitely, you know, hope it's a speedy recovery.
It's nice to see everybody, all the wrestlers, come out and support Rick. We just saw a great tweet sent from Sting. So there's so many people showing their love. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can't wait for Ric Flair to read these messages and be like, you know, pumped and excited and coming back and just, you know, getting back to that perfect place in his health, you know?
Yeah. And it's just, you know, the nature of, like, wrestling news and everything. Everyone's dying to find out, like, and be the first to report or whatever on, you know, what's exactly wrong. You know, you hear different things. And how about we just wait until the family, you know? And I'm saying this after I already speculated on it the other night, but, like, I learned my lesson. Like, let's just wait until the family, like, gives us some official information instead of trying to be the first one with the news.
Mm-hmm. Well, as someone who has to do it as his job, it's been a real bummer to have to provide the updates as they trickle out. Now, unlike a lot of sites, we try to stick to just reporting on what, like, vetted, legitimate reporters report. Like, we don't go off speculation. We don't go off rumors. We don't go off of, oh, you know, so-and-so sent a tweet out. So, like, we don't go off of that stuff. We try and stick to people who, like, have direct contact and people that we know are legitimate reporters. So that, having said that, it's been a bummer to have to continue to update people on, like, the legitimate news that's coming out.
Yeah,
like, we're glad that we can provide that service, but it's a bummer, man. Mm-hmm. Like, anytime someone like this, like, it's been a while since there's been a huge wrestling, like, medical misfortune or something. But it's never easy when it's someone of this stature.
No. I do know that, like, I am getting word that, like, it seems like he's at least, you know,
out of danger.
At least stable. That's
good. That's good.
I mean, I do hear that. I think it's maybe safe to say that.
Well, that's a good thing to say if you're going to say something. That's
so. What else is going on in the world of pro wrestling?
I mean, Tozawa won the Cruiserweight title.
Yeah, I didn't watch all of Raw, but I did see that happening because I had it kind of on in the background as I was getting ready to go over for the tomorrow show, and good stuff.
Congratulations,
to right?
Him. Yeah,
yeah, and so and awesome. Look, man, I've been like very critical on WWE's handling of the Cruiserweight division. But, like, okay, in spite of all the obstacles they've had, like, I think the Cruiserweight division is showing us some stuff.
And I think right now was the best time for Tozawa to take the win because he's hot, man. People are loving the Titus brand. It's funny. It's exciting. You know, Neville already had the belt for 8 months. You know, we were starting to see some sort of change. So I think having Tozawa take that victory, I think it was kind of shocking
Twitter
for everybody.
Twitter blew up for like a couple of days. It was amazing.
And Titus O'Neil is, my God, he's priceless. Just the image of him, like, towering over Tozawa. Like, he's the manager, and that's the fighter.
That's great.
And I mean, there's so many things about this that are pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Cruiserweight division has vastly improved since Titus O'Neil got involved. I think everyone who's connected to Titus right now, it's the best possible thing that could be happening for them.
Yeah, and just, like, overall in the Cruiserweight division, more, like, in the way of strong personalities, you know. I mean, such as Neville, who I'm so happy is a heel now.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know if I've said that much or we've even talked
he's
about.
He's been
that.
Doing amazing work ever since.
Amazing.
He's been the shining light in that division.
Yeah.
Do you think that the Cruiserweight division would benefit from Enzo moving over?
Oh, you know, I talked last time I was with Enzo. He was talking to me about wanting to do that.
Oh, he wants to do it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And I gave him the pros and cons.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I was honest about it. I'm like, look, you know, it's not... You know, it's not Vince's... You know? That's not his... You know? Right. How do you put it?
It's not his baby. So
yes, it's not
really
his baby necessarily.
But you imagine that he'd be a...
And
that
it's not,
would be a fixture of that.
Yes, absolutely. I would like to think so.
Yeah.
And like they don't know what they
and
do
you know Enzo's in-ring style isn't like as compatible with, like I wouldn't call it a cruiserweight style, but that's okay,
right?
Because everyone else in that division's doing that, so he would stand out and he would bring personality and some marquee, you know, name value to it.
I think it would be great to have a little bit more diversity in the Cruiserweight division right now, because during the Cruiserweight Classic, we saw a million styles.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And since it's been on Raw, we've sort of seen one style.
Yeah, there's like
and it's the same style, minus a little bit of taking your time and that out there as the heavyweights do. You all see the same moves and spots and you know, high-risk aerial maneuvers in a World Heavyweight title match.
It's all just WWE style.
Yeah.
It's just all the same. Yep.
So there, you have to do a lot more these days to stand out than just doing moonsaults and, you know, triple NDs from the top rope to the floor.
Right.
It's gonna be a little bit more to it than that from now on, folks.
That's why I think, you know, we're going to talk to him in a minute, but Aleister Black is billed at 205 in WWE.
Yeah,
and he would be another guy who would really set that division apart, because I don't want to see him in the Cruiserweight division, but if they're going to end up putting him in that Cruiserweight division, he would be a guy that would really set it apart as this guy's something special.
Yeah, here's my issue with it is the deterrent for me was always, and I told them that, I'm like, it's a cut in pay.
Yeah.
From where I was to doing that. And so it's hard to get excited for it based on that.
Sure. You know? But you don't think it would be an increase in pay from NXT?
Oh, yeah, maybe. Depends, because not all NXT guys get paid the same, you know.
That's true.
You know, everyone makes their own deals around there, and rightfully so. So.
And we also had Sasha defeat Nia Jax, who's now going to go against Alexa Bliss, too.
Oh, I saw that. So I did see that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that was kind of... Was led to that. We all kind of knew that's what was going to be happening.
No, I didn't know.
I thought Sasha was going
to. I think it's a little too early for, because they're really building to Nia. They're doing a real slow burn to Nia versus Alexa, which is good, which they rarely do anymore. Mm-hmm. So I just think it's a little bit too early, since it's like a stopgap thing because Bayley's injured. And today, interview came out with Bayley where she talked about her injury, and she says it's going to be a couple months at least before she comes back.
They must have built that lifeguard stand thing at the very last minute. Did you see it?
Yeah.
And then they just bought a life spray
silver spray paint on it.
Everyone wants to make fun of that.
What were you going to say, Mark?
It's like, just go to the Ace Hardware, pick me up a lifeguard stand, and get 3 or 4 bottles of silver spray paint. We got ourselves a gift.
No, they built that thing from scratch.
Yeah?
Really?
Oh, I bet you they did. Hell yes.
Although I do like that Mark knows that Ace Hardware is where you get a lifeguard. Yeah.
What year is it? What year is it when there was even such a thing as Ace Hardware? Is that still a thing anymore?
It is. Yeah.
Is it really? Yeah.
So is Orchard.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Hardware stores are always staying in business.
I'm glad to see that some of the stores from my childhood are still around.
That's good. Yeah.
And then on SmackDown, we also had Baron Corbin cash in his money in the bank, and to some people's surprises, it didn't go as planned. So I don't know what you guys thought about that.
I didn't see it, but it didn't sound too, you know. How'd it go?
It didn't shine a great light on Baron. So basically, it was Cena and Jinder, and Baron came out, and Jinder was on the ground. And then afterwards, Baron was walking back to the ring, and he had his money in the bank, and he kind of has that moment where, you know what? Jinder is down on the mat. This is my chance. So he runs back in. The crowd is excited because they think, like, oh, we're going to see a new champion here today. And then all of a sudden, John Cena distracts him, and Jinder gets him and pins him.
Schoolboys him?
That was it, yeah. Up, yeah.
He schoolboyed him for the 1, 2, 3. Wow. Who'd he piss off?
John Cena, maybe.
Holy shit. Who did Baron Corbin piss off?
There was some drama on Twitter a few days prior. I don't know how you guys know about this.
With him and Meltzer?
But he was talking smack about Dave Meltzer. A fan came to his defense, and Baron called him a loser, something along those lines. And this guy is actually a former person on the army and has a picture with Vince McMahon, and he said to him, I don't think Vince McMahon thought I was a loser when he took a picture with me. And then Baron went back and was like, hey man, I'm so sorry, you're not a loser.
You shouldn't
wrong.
Have done that.
But Baron
should have DM'd him on that one.
Baron's been living that gimmick on Twitter for years.
And that's like one of his best qualities is he's funny on Twitter.
He just exposed himself. Like, you be a dick, be a dick.
Yeah.
Like when
double down on it. Like you and your freaking.
Like when the video came out of him after SmackDown being nice to a kid and giving him his shirt, and people were saying, "Oh, he doesn't hate kids after all." And then he went on Twitter. He's like, "That was my family. I don't give a crap about anybody else's kids." Like that's how you need to act. I think he probably just didn't want the optics of like I'm publicly insulting a veteran.
Ah, too bad. Yeah. Too bad. Too late and too bad. I would have just DM'd a guy and said, hey, look, man, I'm just trying to be a heel here.
I think it's so interesting with Twitter today how a lot of the personalities are kind of extending their personalities to Twitter, but after they're no longer a wrestler with WWE, how if people are going to take those tweets and use it against them as they kind of live the rest of their life, which is happening with other folks in different industries. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, at least the WWE people can go, I was doing that in character.
Yeah.
You know, that's the crazy thing about wrestling is like, okay, this is supposed to be a fictitious action adventure show or whatever they were calling it back when they started calling that. Like, I remember in WWE, our show is an action adventure show. Hmm. Really? That was like a
sporting event?
Yeah, like a mock sporting event or.
Like American Gladiators.
Whatever. I didn't even know where I was going with that. Jesus.
I think it made Baron look a little bit like a goober, but since most of the crowd already thinks he's a goober anyway, like I think this adds a little bit, like this adds some serious venom to the Cena Corbin match at SummerSlam, because now, you know, ideally Corbin comes out, Corbin's going to come out fired up at SummerSlam, and he's going to really want to take John Cena out.
So he's working with Cena.
Yeah.
So you know what that tells me? Like, usually, like, okay, booking 101 means that, okay, he did that, now he's going to beat Cena at SummerSlam.
I hope so.
So that's usually the logic when you're, you know.
Yeah, make a guy look so bad.
Sure.
Then you got to.
Or if a guy loses at the pay-per-view, they give him his heat, they let him get his heat back on TV the next
day. There's a schoolboy there.
I think that.
That's brutal.
Moving forward, Baron Corbin should not care about titles, wins, or losses now and just be hell-bent on destroying John Cena, and that should be his character moving forward. He's like, just going
to... He should come out with John Cena gear to put on his opponent.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
And symbolically beat the hell out of John Cena every night.
I love it.
Huh.
And then it was the 20th anniversary of DX.
All right, yeah. I wasn't even aware. Bill, you know that, because I came over and did a podcast with you and Brandon Stroud.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know until I woke up that day and saw all these tweets and videos from everyone. And I was like, oh, okay.
Sure, why not?
Cool.
So, what was your favorite tribute of them all?
I like the New Day one.
Oh, I thought that was great.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
With Woods playing the DX song.
Oh, singing.
And then Kofi just, Degeneration X!
Yes.
So great.
So good. So, yeah. Very cool to have been a part of something that they're still talking about like that. You know. What's this? Oh, listen.
Biggie's slow crotch chop. The slow sensual crotch chop.
I love how they all have different DX and shirts too.
And the trombone is like, you know, green. DX green.
So,
that's a good touch.
Yeah.
That's so great.
You know who you're talking to?
Oh my goodness.
So yeah, very cool. Awesome. Very cool. What else?
Triple H came out. He had a press conference today, and this is really cool. He said that there's a possibility that they're going to be seeing some main roster guys go moving to the NXT brand, which I thought was pretty cool. You know?
Yeah. Did we talk about that?
Yeah, we talked a little about they're considering it a little bit in the Superstar Shakeup.
Did we talk about that on the show, or did we talk about that in private?
I think it was in private. Was it?
Yeah.
And we were talking. I thought we talked about it with Drew McIntyre a little bit.
Yeah.
Or no. Yeah, I think so. So, cool.
The situation of making it feel like they're all on the same field instead of like going to NXT as a demotion instead of a promotion kind of situation.
Such a good interview last week.
Yeah.
Amazing guy.
Drew was excellent.
Love Drew.
Yeah. Shout out to everyone at NXT. We had an amazing time at the NXT show. Thank you,
WWE.
Yeah,
let's talk about
NXT
that before we go to the interview.
I loved it. I thought my favorite match of the night was probably Cassius Ohno and Atami. Okay. I loved that. And I loved the women's, was it a tag match?
Yeah.
The women's tag match was really good, too. It was awesome.
I thought the opening match with Andrade Cien Almas and Johnny Gargano was happening. I mean, the crowd was really on it. They were going crazy for Johnny. It was really awesome.
The crowd in general was an interesting crowd. Definitely.
Because I know you guys, I was a little bit busy running around talking to different people. I still saw some of the matches, but so you guys had a better view of actually, you know, all the matches.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you were having some chats with William Regal.
Well, yeah, about a lot of things.
Yeah, how was that? Yeah. You hadn't seen him in years, right?
No, not years. I see him all the time, like, you know, every several months. But, you know, within those several months, you know, there's always quite a bit of things that happen to talk about, you know. Personal stuff, and then just state of wrestling stuff, and you know where different guys are at, you know, development wise, and you know, and also, I come around, and so they ask me to talk to different guys, you know, like, hey, talk to this guy, or, you know, I'm not gonna name names,
okay,
but I don't. Anyways, so
they use your knowledge.
Yeah, sure, why not?
He's an expert.
I am happy to give it to him.
Was there anyone else there that you hadn't seen in a while, like Baldo or Norman Smiley?
No, I see, like, you know, when I...
The same situation
as because I just saw him at WrestleMania.
Oh, okay.
But the big guy, Lars. Man, that guy's funny.
That guy's the best. That match, that was Lars maybe my favorite
Oni.
Match. Lars and Oni. That was
that
just
boot
amazing.
To the face.
Yeah. It's like as good as like a 6 to 8 minute match can be, you know? Like,
yeah, so it was going to be longer, but... Oni got busted open like a boxer's cut above the eye, and so they cut it short. They went right home, and man, like just high impact stuff, and the people were into it, and they were feeding both of them off of the
energy.
Oni's been
of the doing
crowd.
That kind of stuff for the past couple of weeks. He recently had a match with Hideo Itami where the first couple of moves he looked like he broke Itami's nose, and then Itami went to the back. And then they came out and kept fighting. It was amazing. But in terms of the show, I really liked the tag match between Riddick Moss and Tino Sabatelli versus Aleister Black and Drew McIntyre.
Yeah, it was really good.
Really cool. I liked the character work that Moss and Sabatelli were doing. I can't get out of it, man.
That was, Gino,
that was so funny.
Loved it.
Gino, that was Aleister Black told him to say that. Right in the middle of the ring. Hey, tell your partner you can't get out of it.
That was so funny.
The only blemish on that match is the ending, where Aleister just
dove. Oh, did get caught
on the dive.
Well, that the guy didn't catch him on the Topicon Hero to the floor, and also the one guy Riddick.
Yeah,
he got whipped into the ropes by Drew, and he must not have hit him right because he went all the way through him almost and like ended up coming up with bleeding somewhere.
Yeah.
Got a slip.
Yeah. If you hit those ropes right, that doesn't happen. But maybe Drew, he's so jacked right now, he probably threw him in so hard he freaking almost went into the crowd.
Drew, I think Drew was doing his own tribute to DX with all the crotch chops and everything.
I thought that was a guitar strum.
He was doing the guitar strum, but he was also doing a lot of...
He was having lots of fun.
Very entertaining.
He's a star. When he just walks out, you just see it. Like, everything, the magnitude of it all was just very fun to see.
Well, and a lot of that comes with the confidence that he gained by going out and conquering things on his own away from WWE before coming back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a different person coming back. Knowing the before Drew and the today Drew, like, I can tell you from, you know, just seeing the both of them, it's almost two different people.
Yeah.
When it comes to that.
For sure. Yeah, when he took the time off and he went on the indies and I saw him as Drew Galloway just like a year into him being on the indies, I was like, man, he's got everything. He's amazing.
Yeah.
Especially compared, like, anytime a guy, you know, the independent scene is chock full of extremely talented wrestlers, but anytime you see someone go from, who's been a WWE, go back to the indies and mix it up with other indie wrestlers, like, you instantly see, like, oh, that's a person who's been through the process and has been on TV and understands about psychology and creating a character.
That's right.
Connecting with people.
Yeah, and then he comes back and you mix that with the guys, these young, hungry guys that are great, but they just don't have the experience yet, so they don't know all those fine-tuned things about, you know, how to make the match better, like, in that regard. So you get it's just a fantastic combination. It's really cool.
I think that's why it was good that, you know, that they had them both pair up with Tino and Moss, because, you know, they're, you know, still relatively new. So having them work together was kind of, you know, to help them out and stuff like that.
Riddick Moss, I was talking to him. He's from Edina, Minnesota. He's a Minnesota boy, but he didn't start in the indies. He never stepped foot in the ring until he went to the Performance Center.
Same with Lars Sullivan.
And I was very impressed when I already thought, you know, a guy had a ton of potential, but knowing that there was no prior experience, I'm like, wow, this guy's pretty damn good.
Yeah, we saw Moss at Access 31, WrestleMania 31, and he put on a hell of a show with Hugo Knox, who unfortunately is no longer at NXT, but yeah, I'm so happy that he's finally getting his chance on TV.
He's just, you know, he looks like, you ever see the French Angel?
Yes.
Maurice Tallette?
Yes.
Looks just like him. Big old ass hands.
Yeah.
Big old head.
Weird
I think
body.
His head's gotten smaller, though. His head's starting to look too
maybe
normal.
His body's
now.
Getting bigger.
Yeah. Anyways, big money there.
It's crazy that, like, seeing him in person is even more impressive, where you see, like, he's got, like, a waist that's like that. Like, he's just all chest. All chest and hands.
Hey, so I was thinking, like, before we get too long winded here, is there anything else that we should talk about before we go to the Aleister Black interview?
Last thing I want to do is shout out Sonya Deville, former host here at AfterBuzz TV. It was wonderful to see her and talk to her at the show. She performed at the same place where she did her last MMA fight, and to see her come back and perform for the WWE was just a treat.
Yeah,
it was awesome talking to her.
She was part of a hell of a tag match.
Great.
Ruby Riott and those other girls. Yeah, man.
Sarah
Logan.
Mandy Rose.
Yeah.
She was so over that night, too.
Yeah.
Mandy.
Cool stuff.
Yeah. Oh, my God. They were loving her some men. They were loving them some men.
I may have named her finisher backstage, but it was really cool.
What'd you name it, Jimbo?
Thorn in My Side Slam.
It's a lot of syllables, man.
It ties
more bang for your buck.
Yeah, something like that. But she was cool. I was like, hey, you got a name for that thing? She's like, no. I was like, you should call it the Thorn in My Side Slam. She's like, oh, that's really good. And I tweeted her. She's like, smiley face, happy, hands, whatever. I was like,
she's
oh, cool.
humoring you, Jimbo.
Whatever. Yeah. Whatever. So when Mauro Ranallo says it, when Mauro Ranallo says it on NXT,
Thorn
I'll be like,
in my side slam.
Pat on the back.
Mamma mia!
By the time he tells the name of the move, the match is over. All right, everyone, we're gonna. We're not, I don't think we're going to even take a break. We're going to roll right into the Aleister Black interview live on location at the Club Nobel.
No, we're going to hit a break.
Well, whatever, Mark.
Damn.
My freaking show. All right. Be right back with Aleister Black.
What's up, party people? Roxy Stryer here from The Tomorrow Show with Kevin Undergaro. We're your twice-weekly broadcast of one man's midlife crisis and the mad millennials in Star Trek uniforms that follow him.
And I'm one of those millennials, Lauren Lagrasso here. We've had some amazing guests like Russell Simmons, Ileana Douglas, and Craig Gass. Coolio, right?
Christian Blatt in the house to tell you to go to thetomorrowshow.com to check us out. We're live every Monday and Thursday from 10 to midnight Eastern. That's thetomorrowshow.com. Be there or be square, whatever that means.
Sitting here and catering I was about to say Club Novo, but it's just it's actually called Club Novo.
Yeah, Club Novo.
All right, at NXT, hell of a crowd out there, and I'm with Aleister Black, formerly known as Tommy End, and we met in PCW, Preston City Wrestling, or no?
Southside Wrestling. I wrestled John
Gargano
that night. And you wrestled. Oh my God, who did you wrestle?
I guarantee you it was a tag match. I know that much.
So it might have been the second installment of you and the late Chris Travis,
yes.
Martin Kirby,
maybe
versus I blank there.
So, but I thought that like when we sat down and actually had a pretty good talk,
yeah.
man, about a lot of really cool things.
Yeah,
I thought that was at Preston City.
No. That
no.
was not.
Shows you what I know, people.
The same guy, though. That's, you know.
Yeah, man. It's just that we had so many things come to find out, interests in common, and a lot of them are written here on your body, man.
Oh, yeah.
The stories of all your tattoos. Do you tell the stories of that, much?
To an extent, like some of the things I kind of like keep to myself because I know that not all views in this world are politically
right.
You know, accepted. So some of the things are just like things that I have in my head that
I can
put on my skin.
I'm
so.
Pretty sure I can think of what things those would be.
Sure. Exactly.
We won't talk about those.
Exactly. I remember one thing very vividly, and I remember coming home to my parents, like I said, because like whenever I always wrestled, like when I flew home, the first thing I did was like I walked over to mom because like back in Amsterdam, I left a minute away from my mom. As you do being a good son, you had a whole week of tours and matches, you go back and you talk to mom. That's what you do.
Yeah.
I remember one thing very vividly, and we were standing there and we just ordered some food, and you and we were standing on the outside. It was quite dark. And you looked at me and you said, "Why is that square and compass on your hand?" And I'm like, "Wait."
Yeah.
Because that thing is hidden.
Yeah.
And it was dark. I don't know if you can see it, but it's like infused in the tiger head. And he just caught that one. And I'm like, I thought that was such a mesmerizing thing because, like, it shows that you have attention to detail.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really cool thing. You're just like, we're talking, all of a sudden you go like, so you look me straight in the eyes. You didn't even look at my hand because you picked it up before, obviously. You're like, so why is there a square and compass in your hand? I'm like, wait, you caught that? That's really funny.
And then you told me.
And then I told you.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And you know, a lot of it has to do with, I'm really a believer in the power of symbols.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, same. I believe the stuff that I tattoo on me has a certain power to an extent where
yes.
I don't, you know, to an extent, like, it evokes something. It can, if you want, if there's power behind your thoughts, putting it down onto you, there's definitely something there. The power of will and the power of thought is very strong, especially translated through symbols.
Yeah.
I believe that very much so.
I was just sitting here as you're telling me that, I'm thinking, man, it's really hard to tell you're Dutch, man. Like, because, I mean, even Bas Rutten has more of a Dutch accent than you do. It's very, very American accent.
We've never met, me and Bas.
Yeah.
But I heard that he forgot how to speak Dutch. But then when you listen to his accent, for me as a Dutch person, I go like, come on, you haven't forgotten the Dutch. You pretty much sound like a cliche Dutch person speaking English, with all the respect to Bas. But I heard that he doesn't speak Dutch anymore. Like, he completely forgot about it. I know if it's true. I don't know if it's true. Like, don't pin me down on this, Bush, if you're, you know, like, I don't pin me down on this. But I've heard that he doesn't speak Dutch anymore at all.
You guys don't know each other? But no. Didn't you guys come from the same kickboxing academy?
No. And Bush is much older than me. Like, Bush did pancreas. I did kickboxing. Obviously, like, Bush did kickboxing, but by the time I kind of got into, like, kickbox stuff, I think he was already in Japan and stuff. Like, I do.
I thought maybe it was the same school, though.
No, I came from Schreiber, and at the time, Dick Frey and
Hans, Dick Leon Frey?
Yeah, and Hans Nijman, back in Beverwijk, where Stefan Struve is originally from.
Right.
I come from, like, those, like, schools and stuff like that. And I think he came from... Oh God!
Yeah.
I always forget his name. He used to fight in Thailand. He's the godfather of kickboxing.
It's like Rob Kamen.
Rob Kamen.
Yeah, he's about as badass as you get.
I think again, don't pin me down on this because like I haven't studied like the backstory of Buzzard and very well. Like I love his matches, but I think he came from Rob Kamen, his gym, Kyokushin Kai. With the boxing turning into kickboxing because that's what Kamen invented.
Oyama, Masa Oyama. With the punch in the bowl. Did you ever see the videos of him actually killing the bowl though? You know the story of him killing the bowl with the punch? Masa Oyama, the father of Kyokushin Kai.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then when you watch the actual film footage, man, the bowl was tied up and it was bullshit, man. I'm sorry. Not that he wasn't a badass, but that what you know, but what that story was built on.
Footage did not translate.
No, man. No, I really wish I wouldn't have saw that.
You killed the man.
So, but were you always a big wrestling fan?
Yeah. So, when I grew up, I didn't really watch WWE. We didn't have it. We had Eurosport,
right.
And Eurosport had New Japan. So growing up, I watched New Japan all the time. And then from New Japan, we went to WCW.
Yeah.
And I think it was like 15 or 16 when I first ever saw WWE. And I was like, what the hell is this? And the funny thing was, guys that I come to love in like New Japan and in WCW, all of a sudden we're in this company called WWE. And I'm like,
yeah.
Are they working for the same? Because like there was no chronological order in what I was watching because I watched what was available at the time. So we had an hour of like WCW, we'd had an hour of New Japan, but nothing was like taped back to back where it was like, okay, we're doing this and this and this and this, and like there was no okay, this week this happened, and they followed up the next. Not everything was random. So yeah. I was just watching random time frames of professional wrestling that was
so it wasn't even chronological necessarily.
Nothing. No.
How many other people your age wanted to be pro wrestlers in Amsterdam though?
Funny enough, I found a relatively big group of guys once the internet started kicking in more. Like you know, you had the little forums and stuff like that, and you started searching for like professional wrestling and. You found out like dudes living close to you, like, oh yeah, I'm a big wrestling fan as well. And like, hey, we should totally like meet up and hang out. And like, I had this one buddy, he's a wrestler still in Holland, Tankwa.
Uh-huh.
And he used to get all the cool stuff. He used to have all the tapes. I don't know how, but he was one of those guys that always had a connection everywhere to get whatever he wanted. And he had like, he introduced me to like All Japan, and he introduced me to Noah, which was really young at the time.
Yeah.
And we watched Torimon, Revolution Pro from back in the day, like, you know, the original Cali group,
yes.
You know, Super Dragon, Taro, like all these guys, Quicksilver, you know, name them. And that influenced me a lot. And then like the early years of like Ring of Honor started coming up. And I was so influenced like by that, like especially from an early age on, that like as like a 6-year-old, because that was the first time I kind of like watched wrestling between the age of 3 to 6. To me, what I saw was martial arts, because I saw two men fighting. And then growing up in the 80s and the early 90s, you had all these like martial arts movies. You had Bloodsport, you had Kickboxer. So everything for me combined into this one package of like, what I'm witnessing is two people fighting. I have got to do that. I had a school that provided both. I had a teacher trained in karate and judo. And then I started moving over to like stuff like Panchik Shilat and kickboxing. And obviously at the time of like 10, 11, 12, I realized that professional wrestling and martial arts were two different things, but I got a knack for it. And I was like, you know, I like what I'm doing. It was fun. And I was still like, I felt like a badass kid. Like I'm 10 years old. Like I'm kicking and punching through boards and stuff like that. It's awesome. And, I just kept doing it because I just love doing martial arts, and it was like it was something to kind of like, especially the way I grew up, like it was something to focus all my energy on, and like it's kind of it was a good escape with wrestling. It was a good way to focus my energy and like kind of not have all these things that I didn't want to think about or like situations that I didn't want to be in, because I put everything into like martial arts and like just like I had wrestling and martial arts. And that was the thing that I was like, and I knew the second I had the opportunity, I was 15, I had the opportunity to train with some guys in The Hague. I don't know if you've ever been in The Hague.
I know what The Hague is. Well, The Hague is the international court.
Yeah. You and me can have a big conversation about that without the camera.
That's right.
You
know? Like,
and there were a couple guys, and they trained with NWA Hammerlock at the time. And they were like, you know, we have the school, blah, blah, blah. It was called DWF, Dutch Wrestling Federation, obviously. And I started training there for a bit and picked up some of the basics. And then I started doing like small matches. And then I started like traveling to like Germany, England, because I just wanted more. I just started gathering all this like information. And I couldn't stop. I mean, I'm sure you're still the same. Like you wake up and the first thing you think about is what?
Yeah. Wrestling. I mean, it still is like.
That's a big
my life, yeah.
And it's the same goes for me. Like, I wake up, and the first thing I think is wrestling. My entire life, obviously, being in WWE, like, it revolves around wrestling. But even if I were not in a situation where I was signed by the WWE, I would still think wrestling. Because that's all I ever wanted to do.
And like, okay, but you started off as a martial artist. And I did, too. And I really think, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is what separated me and it's what separates you from the rest of the guys, like our size.
Yes.
But the thing is like a lot of really good martial artists I've seen try to translate that into wrestling, and it's not as easy as people think.
It isn't. No, you need training. Like, there's a lot of people, because to a lot of MMA fighters, pro wrestling is a very popular thing, and I'm very thankful for them to, you know, trying to make the transition into professional wrestling. But then they figure out that it's not as easy as a lot of people think. And just because you have a good athletic background doesn't make you necessarily a good wrestler, because it takes a lot to be a good professional wrestler. And I always think that if you pick up something when you're young, your transition is always going to be quicker or better. Because if you have that mind that like just absorbs everything as a sponge, and I think if you're 25, 26, 27, and you make the transition to pro wrestling from MMA, it's a lot harder. It's always going to be a lot harder. I'm not saying it's impossible, because it isn't, because there's good dudes out there competing that are doing phenomenal work, but it's always more difficult stepping in a later age into professional wrestling as in a younger age.
Incorporating the kicks and everything else, like there, it's a lot more just to make them look good and for it to translate, you know, aesthetically.
Yes.
I see a lot of really good guys that just, they don't get that. It just doesn't translate.
No, I think one of the hardest things for me was my early years as a professional wrestling, let's say ages 15 to 18, my striking style didn't translate. And I went back to kickboxing, and I went back to like all my martial arts because I started training again, because I missed the conditioning. I just missed the dojo environment, because a dojo environment, nothing beats a dojo environment. It's completely different than a pro wrestling training facility. It's completely different. Different rules, different way of approaching it, and I just needed that discipline again. And I remember starting hitting the heavy bag and just literally dissecting my strikes. I was literally writing down how my knee would bend, how this would, I would throw my hip and how I would put my hooks and how I would put my overhands and everything. I started dissecting it all. And then it hit me. It's like I need to combine my technique with the mentality and mindset of professional wrestling. And that's what made my striking work. And a lot of people will say, man, if you kick someone, it looks like, oh. And that's exactly what I want it to be. You know, like there's a lot of thought going in. Like, And I'm sure you see this. I see a lot of like young kids, and I can say young kids now. I'm 32 years old. I've been in this business for 15 years. I can say young kids now. And they look at professional wrestling, and the first thing they do is like, oh, I'm going to do some strikes. And I'm always kind of like, don't be so hasty with doing strikes. Don't be so hasty with throwing out all these combinations. It's not as easy as you think it is, because I see so many kids out there, and I see them strike, and I'm like, dude, it doesn't sit well. I can tell that you have never in your life done this. And I don't blame them, because, you know, they see other people do it, and it gets a good reaction. They see me on television. They see Finn on television. It gets a good reaction. You know, you see all these cruiserweights doing all these, like, beautiful strikes, and it gets a good reaction. So they're thinking, hey, you know, it works. But then the reality of it is that a lot of those dudes have like an authentic background in it. And we know how to strike, and we know how to kick, and we know how to dip and dive, and then bob and weave, and we know how to deep kick, and we know how to do flying knees and all that stuff, because that's in our background. It's not as easy as people think it is. So for me, the striking ability is something that needs to be thoroughly researched if a young up-and-comer wants to use striking in his moveset. I think it's the same as like choosing a gimmick. If I were to choose having a football gimmick, it would make sense for me to study football. Because how would I translate that into the audience? There needs to be a connection.
I mean, I don't see this as a gimmick, man. I mean, it's you. It's 100% authentic. 100%. And that's why it works, man. Like, if you got to go out and pick a gimmick, I'm so over that whole way of doing it.
Sure. You know? I'm just using it as a reference, right. Basically. Like, if I were to. You know, sure. Like I feel like in order for something to connect with an audience, there needs to be a form of authenticity in it. I feel that if you want some people to go like, right, I get him, you have to have lived it. Because if you haven't lived through it, you can't tell the story. And that's what we do. It's like it's one giant story. At least that's how I feel about it. It's one roller coaster. And like if there's only a slight percentage of me with what I do that isn't authentic, someone's going to pick up on that. And everything I do is me, 100%.
And wrestling used to be so bad about not, like, people doing gimmicks that weren't authentic to them. And it's just, wrestling fans have come a long way, man. They don't buy that anymore.
No, they're smart. and they know what they want. You know, that's the good thing. And I think professional wrestling will always be a reflection of how society is. I think that with who I am translates very well in 2017, because a lot of young kids look up to me and go like, man, he's different.
Yeah.
You know, I feel different. I'm an individual, and they're individuals. Everyone's an individual. Like, individuality is such a strong thing in our society, so that translates into wrestling. And here comes this guy, and they've never seen anything like me before. I'm covered in tattoos head to toe. I have this striking style. I'm smaller than most competitors. And people are like, yeah, that's my guy. And why? Because they can see a part of themselves in me. It's no longer, right, you're unconventional, back of the line. It's like, no, we're a big group of people. We matter. And I think that translates for them into me. That's what works.
And it also, I just think, like you're saying, with the way society is, I think that's what people are, they're attracted to that.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure. I fully 100% agree.
Question about the strikes. You've got so many people coming into MMA now, like people like Sonya Deville, or people coming from MMA into wrestling. Yeah. Sonya Deville, Matt Riddle, of course. Yeah. But you've got, you know, Stephen Bonner's coming in now too.
Yeah. Yeah.
The striking. Do you think another part of the problem with people not understanding how the striking works is because a true MMA strike in wrestling will hurt like hell, but not necessarily look good? Do you think people are not fully grasping that aspect of it, that it has to be authentic and also theatrical?
Well, I think that's exactly what I said. I had to dissect my striking and my pro wrestling mindset and combine the two. Like, if I hit someone, it's there, but you're gonna walk away in a good fashion. You know, but you're gonna feel it. Like, what we do is like, to an extent, is like is like a performance art. I feel, you know, like it's the highest form of chess, ballet, dance, martial arts. Like, there's so much in wrestling. It's not like, it's not just something that you can just like explain to someone. That's why it's also difficult to translate what you do to people. And I think for a lot of like professional fighters, like they're used to watching a certain style of professional wrestling, and I think, oh, that's how I'm gonna translate it. And then they figure out like, oh, I can't do that. And then they start pulling it back, and then it doesn't look good, and they can't find that middle ground. Yeah. And I think, you know, you mentioned Sonya, you mentioned Matt Riddle, those, you know, two successful transfers, I feel, especially with Matt. Matt's fantastic. I've competed against Matt a couple times, and that dude's like, he's awesome. You know, he just picks it up. He's like, he's one of those guys.
Yeah, he's like a prodigy.
He's insane. Yeah. Same with Jeff Cobb.
We talk about Matt every week on the show.
Yeah, no, Matt's awesome. I love him. Yeah. He's one of my boys. I love that kid. He's awesome.
And Shayna too. Shayna Baszler.
Yeah. She's coming a long way as well. You know, like she a lot of people, you have to go through that struggle. And again, I say this, it's a reflection of society, it's a reflection of life. If you don't go through that struggle, you can't live it. Yeah. So you have to go, all right, you know what, I don't know what I'm doing anymore. Because at that point, you're left to your own devices. And once you start leaving, like some people are like, oh, you know what, done. And some people start more thinking, that's what I started doing. So a lot of people either go this way or that way. And the people that go that way will make it, and the people that go that way will like, you know. But that's up to them, and they'll find new things in life. But you have to have struggle in order to persevere, 100%.
So you're, like, it seemed to me, it's hard for me to call you Alistair, man.
You can call me Tommy.
Okay, like, Tommy.
On the website it says, formerly known as Tommy Yen.
Right
you
on.
You can call me Tommy, it's fine.
But was WXW kind of your home promotion for a while?
Germany. I'd say if I look back, my home promotions were Progress, WXW, ICW, and Southside.
I love Southside. Ben Auld, want to say what's up?
Fight Club. What's up, Ben? And Fight Club Pro. You know, those boys did a fantastic thing.
Right on.
I'd say those five, six companies were like, but I will say that WXW, they made me. They 100% gave me a platform. They gave me the matches that I needed. They gave me the exposure that I needed. They sent me out everywhere in the world. And, like, they gave me that, right, this is this guy. And it took me a long time to kind of get good at what I do. But, you know, I will always credit them for, like, they were my starting success, 100%.
Sorry.
No, go ahead, man.
What was it like for you? Because you said you were so heavily influenced by that original Revolution Pro with Taro and Super Junkyard. What was it like to grow up with that and then finally come to PWG and work for Super Dragon?
I was the best. I've met him before because I wrestled him before in like 2005.
I have to find that match.
Well, it's like, I'm going to tell you right now, I wasn't very good. It was fun because, like, Super Dragon's always been really good to me. He's always been a super nice guy to me. Same with, like, Excalibur and stuff like that. And we were on the – after that show, it was a NOAH Winter Navigation in combination with WXW. And after that, PWG ran their first ever European tour called, like, PWG.
Yes, they ever ran outside of the States, right?
It's like PW European Vacation. I was on that one as well, and, like – so I always kind of had a good relationship with them, and then I kind of they started doing their stuff, and I started like building back up there, and then like 2009, 2010, 2011, I started going to Japan more. Like, I flew over to CZW, and then I came back, did more Japan, then got more famous in like Scotland and England, and all of a sudden, like 2013, 2014, I started touring through America more, and all of a sudden Chris Hero hits me up, and he's like, Gassius Ono, and he hits me up and he's like, "Hey man, so I saw you here because, like, I mean, Cassius is my wrestling dad to an extent. If it wasn't for him, like, a lot of who I am training wise and wrestling wise and where I've been would not have been possible. So shout out to Cassius Ono. He messaged me saying, "Hey, so you're coming over for like Mania weekend? I got this and this for you. PWG is interested in you. Are you interested?" I'm like, well, you know, I mean, yes, you know. So here I'm sitting at home going like, well, I'm just this like small kid from like Amsterdam that has no, my country has no wrestling history, zero. So a few things like Wim Ruska, you know, the judoka. Yeah. He started doing, he tried doing pro wrestling. He even had Jado and Gato in like 88, 89 in Amsterdam. Didn't work.
Didn't he work with Inoki?
Yeah.
Wilhelm Ruska, right?
Yeah.
Was that his first name?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it just didn't work. And I'm thinking like, wow, like, you know, I'm gonna do this really cool company, PWG. Because like, you can argue about PWG like as much as you want, but they have a big revenue, you know, like, and they're 400 or 500 passionate fans packed in that small venue, man, and they give everything from start to finish. They give everything. It's an atmosphere I can't describe. Yeah. Nothing compares to PWG. It is a fantastic place. So I did that, and I wrestled here on that match. Is, you know, that match went up and ran its course in a very, very positive way for me. Allowed me to come back a couple times, did two bolas. Unfortunately, I had to pull out to a couple of shows, do some knee injuries, but yeah, that was wild.
I've got one more question for you. Before you came to NXT, yeah, you had absolutely the best pro wrestling merchandise in history.
Thank you.
Just the best, the Sumerian Death Squad stuff, and
thank
just
you,
everything.
Thank you.
The best stuff ever. And then you had your first NXT shirt come out. Best NXT shirt of all time. I want to know about the process of you bringing you to NXT.
So,
I was going to ask him that. It doesn't matter.
We can edit this, right? So we can put his voice in here. Like, yeah. All right, tech guy. Thank you. So when we initially started talking merch, well, let's rewind the whole thing back to the process of like, we're getting this guy signed. So when they originally got me, from what I gathered from the conversations I was having with some of the people within WWE, they were like, no, we got you because of all that, you know, all the stuff that you did and all the, you know, the character that you portrayed and just basically the person that you are. And we just like this, and this is what we want to present to an audience in a certain way with our twist on it. So I felt that I didn't really need to change a lot of things. I just needed to fine tune a lot of things. And like, it's still a process, you know, like we're still getting there. Like the WWE style is a different style than what I'm used to still. I'm learning every day. The Performance Center is a great place. Literally, like, it's changed my life as a performer, as a competitor. So bringing all that with me, and I showed them my merchandise, and I said, like, whoa, I always did this, and they loved the fact that I had white shirts. So for anyone out there who always, like, hates on me on Twitter for having white merchandise, but, like, always goes, like, I was his biggest fan. I've always had white shirts. Because everyone always had black shirts. So It was always reversed. Like, we would, me and Michael Dante, my tech partner, we would bring out, I think the ratio was 5 white shirts to 1 black shirt design. Or we would reverse the designs. But we would bring out the white shirts first, simply because everything we stood for was counterculture. So we looked at wrestling and we're like, well, if you're going to bring out black shirts, we're going to bring out white shirts. You're going to do this, we're going to do that. And why? Because we could. And because people understood, again, reflection society, you know, because people understood, and that's exactly what we did. So with the process came, they presented me with a bunch of options, and the Hand of Glory stood out to me. I really liked that design because it had a lot of things, and especially if you know the backstory of the Hand of Glory. It's there's something alluring about it. It's quite gruesome at the same time, but it's also like it's sort of a warning to an extent, you know. So I thought it was a really cool concept, and obviously it's different than what they've ever presented before. So why not bring the merchandise in with this guy that we're giving a different light than we've ever given anyone, and why not bring his merchandise in there as well? So they started out with the white shirt, and funnily enough, they couldn't keep track of it. It kept selling out. It kept selling out. Every time I was like, are you guys bringing out the black shirt? And then he's like, no, because the white units keep going. We don't have to because the white shirt keeps selling. So, you know, that's what that process was.
The Ascension has some symbols in their stuff.
Hell yeah.
Any of the same ones?
No, because didn't they use the Eye of Horus?
Yes. Yeah,
yeah, they did the Eye of Horus, right? I never used the Eye of Horus. I used the Eye of Providence. I have used...
The Eye of Providence is the one that's inside the
Eye of Providence is the Eye of God. You know, because there's multiple. People always go on, like, oh, my God, Illuminati. Rah. But people don't understand that if you walk into your local church and you see the lead and paint windows, the Eye of Providence is presented there because it means that God watches everything, God sees everything. Now, people know that I'm not a religious person, but again, we talked about this. I like symbolism. I like the thoughts behind symbolism. I feel symbols are empowering to an extent. So, I've used the Eye of Providence. I've used the All-Seeing Eye. Yeah. They're two different things. And I basically used a lot of like symbolism that I knew would evoke a reaction as well.
Yeah.
Why? Because I know what works. Simple as that.
So there's a lot, there's definitely, like, it's not just random symbols thrown out. The H has a meaning and...
So, one of the funny things is, and like not a lot of people to this day still realize, but the old Sumerian death squadron had a hidden message in all of them. And I'm not going to tell them about any of them, but there's hidden messages in our shirt that a lot of people didn't pick up on. There is words put in a certain way. There is like, all right, I'll give away one. I used to bring out like this shirt with like stuff from my diary that I wrote because I was obviously a very teen angsty kid. And I had like the Tommy N shirts where like the stuff was written on the back, and some of the letters are printed thick, and if you put all those letters together, you get certain words. And a lot of people didn't pick up on that. And
like cipher.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. And we had symbolisms like, and if you put the shirt in light, then like all of a sudden something would come through, and we had all these things. And that's why I still think that like a lot of people like 10, 15 years from now are going to go like, man, they were something different, weren't they? If you look at our promos.
That's some Rosicrucian shit.
Yeah, hell yeah. But we just wanted to do something different and like put some thought into it and make it creative and make it fun and make it something that was there because there was an interest there, because there is an interest now in a lot of things. Yeah. Like a lot of people are interested in like certain occult things, and before people flip out on the world occult is nothing more than like diving into like esoteric belief systems or like mathematical systems that have a different way of presenting themselves to human beings. Like it's philosophy. It's not necessarily, oh my God, it's all spooky and this and paranormal. I'm like, ah, the devil. Like it has nothing to do with it at all. People are so uneducated, and we kind of thrived off that. We thrived off the fact that people didn't really specifically knew the symbols, so we used them and we'd invoke a reaction with people, and it was
just,
like a...
Just because they don't know the symbols don't mean they don't have power to them as well.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. So, like, one group of people thought it was amazing, and the other people were like, well, we can't wear this. And I respect both groups. I was like, that's good, because now I know, because that was a measuring stick for me as well. I remember very vividly... We had this segment that we filmed, and we put it like it wasn't YouTube, and it was not long after that I got emails from religious groups asking us to cease and desist because what we were doing was like this and that and such, and it was such an interesting concept where people were genuinely this like concerned for what we're doing, because like what we're doing is nothing more than shock rock. Because that's what it is, shock rock, you know? But it's still a big part of me, because a lot of that stuff is stuff that I learned, stuff that I read about, because it's a huge interest of mine, you know? Like I said, like we used all that stuff to get reactions from people, and it was fantastic.
Hey, you're in a tag match tonight. Is that what they've been putting you in a lot lately?
Yes and no. Yeah. Like me and Drew have been tagging a lot. Yeah. You know, Big Drew is we all know Big Drew. So it's really awesome to tag with him. He knows so much. He's been in the business for such a long time, and he's been here, you know, obviously before he's been here so long. So I learned a lot from him. I go up and down. It's singles, tags, six mans. It's just a lot of fun, man.
And the whole WWE style thing. My friends and I, we call it the main event style.
Yeah.
You know, more or less. But to me, the main event style is actually whatever works. You know?
Yes.
And to me, what tells me something works is the reaction from the crowd, obviously.
Yeah.
And obviously, like, there is some adjustments to be made.
For sure.
Big time. But still, man, like, what you did before you got here was working, or you wouldn't be here right now.
No, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And that's also something that's why I'm trying to fit my style within the WWE mold. And like I said, it's still like trial and error here and there. I feel like I'm finding a good ground for everything. I feel like I have a good base to kind of like build from at this point. And slowly but surely we're adding, throwing stuff out, putting more stuff on top so this works, and kind of twisting stuff around. It's a process.
The thing is, what might seem like people might feel like you need to just, I really don't think you do in a lot of ways, because so much of what I see in wrestling these days, it's all routine.
Yeah.
You know, all the spots, like, you know, just the way we go into dirt. I mean, it gets routine because we got to work every night. And so, you know, you get a, and shit ends up being routine. But you created your own routine. So you're the first one to do these routines.
Yes. Sure.
And that's why it stands out so much. Yep. And that's what's so cool. And I, you know, the more like the more other people realize that's what you got to do, the more they'll stand out too.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, we'll keep the secret to ourselves.
No, I appreciate you saying that. It's just like, again, bringing the martial arts in there, and what were we learning at martial arts? If I was learning with kickbox, we're doing pad work. I was learning jab, duck, hook, up, low kick, you know, stuff like that. And I was like, all right, how can I translate that into like something myself? And that's where all the combinations started coming in. That's where the action reactions started coming. That's why I started blocking a certain way. That's why I started throwing counter punches or counter kicks in a certain way, just because that's the way I wanted to present it. I just wanted to stand out completely and actually be like this martial artist in a pro wrestling world.
That was it. Hey, before we take this home, because Bobby Roode and Roderick Strong just finished their match. Yeah, they just killed it. Now I can't remember what I was going to say.
I know that we all, I speak for Sean and all of us when I say we're very excited to be able to watch you every week. We're very excited to see what the future brings for Aleister Black.
Now I remembered. I was going to say, who are you looking forward to? To work, I know this is kind of a generic question, but there's a lot of guys in WWE
takeover, and it's going to be the first ever, like legit first ever time me and Hideo Itami are gonna collide. I am so looking forward to that. He's been on my radar for such a long time, and we've had a couple of times on the independents where we were supposed to face each other, but circumstance. I think one time I was injured, and I think one time they couldn't fly over. Something like that. I'm not sure. I don't know all the ins and outs. So this one, the third time's a charm, right? So I take over. You're gonna see a fight.
And now he's a heel. And regardless of whether they want you to be a heel or not, the people dig you.
Yeah,
that's just the way it is.
That's the way it is.
I'm not for going against the people.
And that's a good thing. And that's one thing that a lot of people, I hope, eventually realize. You don't have to like. It's up to you.
Right.
You can do whatever.
It doesn't feel like they're like the company's going like this guy. They're just putting you out there and okay, let's see what.
Yeah.
Yes.
And some people.
Your theme song. No man is ever truly good. No man is ever.
And
truly
who wrote that theme song?
You did.
There we go.
Nice.
So no, that's literally it. That's legit it. I just walk this path, and you either like it or you don't. And if you like it, it's awesome. If you don't, it's fine as well. You don't have to like anything. You don't have to be on my side.
There's so many other things I want to talk to you about. Will you come on the show again?
Hell yeah.
Thanks, man.
Bro, thanks for having me.
Hell yeah, man.
Hey guys, Maria Menounos here. We want to let you know about my new show on SiriusXM Stars Channel 109. It's called Conversations with Maria, and it's live Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. Go to conversationswithmaria.com for more info. Buzz you later.
All right, we're back from that amazing interview with Aleister Black.
It's a great interview.
Amazing. Say it.
It's amazing.
Amazing.
All right. So I appreciate everybody tuning in. And before we go, let's do the, you know, all that
social
stuff we
media.
Do at the end here.
Plug time.
Jim, oh, you want to go, Jimbo?
I'll start. Follow me on Twitter at Jimbo in the Booth. Thank you to everyone at WWE and NXT for allowing us to come and the whole crew to enjoy ourselves. We had an amazing time. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I agree. You guys can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at underscore Denise Salcedo. And then don't forget to tune into the SummerSlam AfterBuzz TV show right after SummerSlam. I will be on the panel, and I'm looking forward to it.
Cool. You can find me on all social media at Sundown Motel. Check out our pro wrestling writing at withspandex.com, uprocks.com/prowrestling. We are launching the With Spandex podcast this week. Our first guest is not Sean, but Sean will be on very soon. So stay tuned for that, and we'll both myself and Brandon Stroud and also Danielle Matheson, we will all be in New York for SummerSlam weekend. So if you see us, come say hi. We'll be at NXT, we'll be at SummerSlam. We love to meet new people.
Damn, running for politician. You can follow us on everything on AfterBuzz TV, Twitter, The Real X-Pac, IG, X-Pac12360, Facebook, X-Pac12360 Show. Also, you can buy all of Sean's tees at Pro Wrestling Tees at Sean Waltman. And also...
It's slash.
Slash. My bad.
I slash.
Slash. Slash Sean. And then also iTunes. Give us all those 5 stars. All the time, comments, and on YouTube, all that good stuff. Also, we have a new thing, celebvm.com/Sean Waltman.
Yeah, that's something that I've had available for a while, actually. It's just I haven't really talked about it much, and like because I'm not one to really go, hey, come buy this or come buy that from me. But we bring this show, been doing this show for almost a year.
50
yeah,
today.
And I know you hear this a lot with other shows. Hey, we bring you to a show for free, so could you do this or that? But, hey... You can buy one of these celebrity video messages, you know, for somebody like a, you know.
Like a birthday gift.
Yeah, a birthday, wedding.
Anniversary.
Yeah, anything. Divorce. Christmas, you know, whatever. So.
I got 2 words for
basically
you.
Basically anything.
That's kind of good, though.
And if you don't have an occasion and just simply want to support the show, just for anything.
Or yeah, if you ever wanted your favorite wrestler to tell you something. Have Sean tell you.
So it's us. It's celebvm.com/Sean Waltman.
And then also you can find me on everything at TK Trinidad. I will also be at SummerSlam. I'm going to be taking over the AfterBuzz Twitter. So we're going to have a whole bunch of social media stuff going there.
You're
going
to be taking over Takeover.
Taking over Takeover.
Yeah, that's what's up.
It's going to be fun. Yep. Just look all for right. The chicken the fro.
See y'all next week right here on X-Pac 12360.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, Sean Waltman, producers Jimbo Frank and TK Trinidad, managing producer of AfterBuzz TV Wrestling Mark Donica, and the entire X-Pac 12360 staff, we would like to thank you for tuning in. Like us on Facebook, rate and comment on iTunes and YouTube, follow X-Pac on Twitter at TheRealXPac, and email us at X-Pac12360Show@gmail.com. This has been a presentation of the AfterBuzz TV Network. Buzz you later!